than just summarize what we were doing the other day, but apply it to a couple other examples. Let's say I have a convex mirror. Let's say F is minus 10 centimeters. That would correspond to this. Now let's say that the object distance is 15 centimeters in front of the mirror. Then where is the image? So this would correspond to the first diagram I drew. Okay, what do we have? 1 over d sub o plus 1 over di is 1 over f. Solve for 1 over di. And that's 1 over f, which is minus 10, minus 1 over do, which is 15. So these have a common denominator of 30, so this is 3 over 30, 2 over 30, minus 3, minus 2 is 5, minus 5, so it's minus 5 over 30. That's 1 over di, so di, you have to flip this, don't forget. You have to flip that around, so that's minus 30 over 5, which is minus 6 centimeters. Okay. So that tells me that the image is where?
Behind
the mirror, because I see the minus sign. If di is negative, it's behind the mirror. If di is positive, it's in front of the mirror, just like we have here. And then if I want the height of the object, I'd have to give you the, right, height of the object. Find the height of the image. It would be minus di over do times that. And so what would we get? Di over do. Di is 6 over do. That's 6 15ths. That's less than 1. So we indeed will get something smaller. Okay. What about an example like this? And we convince you from the mirror equation that we get something behind the mirror. For an example like that, okay, we can consider F is, I don't know, 5 centimeters. That would be this distance. So let's say I put my object halfway between F and the vertex, so let's say DO is equal to 2.5 centimeters, then what is di? Then 1 over di is 1 over f minus 1 over do. 1 over f is 1/5. Minus 1 over 2.5. Or we could write that as 5/2, right? 1/5 minus 2/5. It's negative 1/5. So d sub I looks like negative 5 centimeters. So again, it is negative. Okay, so it's possible by just moving the object that I could go from a real to a virtual image. And we would also notice that instead of seeing it upside down, all of a sudden you see it flip upright. So,
that takes care of some of the things we need to know about spherical mirrors. And now when you go to parks, fun places where they have these mirrors, okay, you can think about physics. Actually, it was a long time ago, my kids were actually a little shorter. Okay, we were over in Bergen Ferry. What's that mall over there? Town Center or something?
Crabtree?
Huh?
Crabtree?
No, that's in Raleigh. That's outside Raleigh. No, in Cary, there's a little mall out there, and they had this electronics shop, and they had these dark and curved mirrors, right? Kind of S-shaped, but like taking, I don't know, a big can, slicing it in half, and putting the two pieces next to each other. And you could actually see your reflections, and you could go up through the mirror and walk away from the mirror and see these various things happening from just from this curvature, right, from these mirrors. You could actually see your image changing and things like that. Yes?
Does the image turn virtual when you get past the center or the focal point, or does it just depend on the mirror? There's like no certain point?
There is a certain point, and that's what you should find. Okay? So there's some apps online, right, that I've got some links to. You can just go in there and drag the arrow and watch what happens to the lines as you drag it back and forth and see and locate. Okay? And it does flip at a certain point for all mirrors. Okay? So it doesn't just depend on the mirror. It has to be a concave mirror, because for a convex mirror, it's always virtual. Okay. I guess that's it for that chapter. So let's go to the next chapter, which is chapter 26. Okay, we're still doing geometric optics, but now what I want to do is look at what's called refraction. And then after the break, okay, we'll come back and look at lenses, particularly thin ones. Like I said, the idea here is that light, so far for us, has only traveled in a vacuum. Okay, but we don't live in a vacuum. Okay, so we have to think about what happens to light when it travels in other media. Okay, when it travels in air, it goes pretty much the speed of light. It's off just a little bit. Okay, but if I had light traveling through water, we find out that the speed of light in water is different than the speed of light in a vacuum by a significant amount. And that is the first thing we have to understand. So light in typical media has a wave speed which is less than the speed of light. Slows down. And we can characterize media by this relationship by defining what's called an index of refraction. And the index of refraction is essentially the ratio between these wave speeds. Okay, the index of refraction is designated with an N. And it's given by C over V. Since typically V is less than C in media, then C over V is typically bigger than 1. And we can look up a few values. The book provides a few for us. Okay, so for air, it's 1.000, and then depending upon the temperature of air and things, we start getting some non-zero values, okay, for digits. But that's pretty close to 1, so we're going to consider
considering the accuracy that we use in this class, all right, we'll just take it as one. Okay. Water. And typical value for water is something like 1.333. We're about 4/3. Glass. Typically, the type of glass they talk about is crown glass. There are all kinds of glasses out there. And for glass, we can get values of something like 1.52, maybe a few other digits, depending upon the type of glass. Diamond. Diamond can be as high as, say, 2.4, 2.5. for the index of refraction. So those are just a couple of typical values to give you a range. speed of light in diamond. So if you want to find out what the speed of light is in some material, you look up the index of refraction, which is given here, and solve for V. So V is equal to C divided by N. Since N is bigger than 1, and we know V's got to be smaller than C, then you just divide by the index of refraction. What is C?
3 times 10 to the 8
meters per second. Divided by, say, 2.4. So 3 over 2.4 is 1 point something. I didn't expect Pat to compute anything today.
It's a Tuesday.
Goes into 24 eight times, so that's got digits somewhere to 1/8. So what was that? 1.25 times 10 to the 8 meters per second. So we could significantly reduce the speed of light by sending it through media. Okay. So that's the first thing that we can note, okay, about light going through media. It slows down. Okay, so what happens when light slows down as it comes through media? Well, what we can do is we can go back to the little picture I had the other day. Okay, we have light coming to an interface. Okay, if I have two different media, say one with an index of refraction N1 and the other with an index of refraction N2, we could think of this as air, and that is water, and light's coming in to this region, and this area, that plane, between the two of those is called an interface. That's the boundary between the two media. So I have light that's coming along. We've been drawing light rays coming down. There's a normal. And then the angle of incidence is equal to the angle of reflection. So let's see, roughly. Hey, that's like 31 degrees. Is what happens to light that actually enters into the second medium. So to look at that, what we have to do is think about the wavefronts as they're coming in. Here's a wavefront. Okay, the separation between any two of these is the wavelength of the light as it's coming in. And then as these are coming through and they hit the surface, then the question is, what happens? Well, they slow down. Okay. Some people come up with analogies for these things. This is like way back, say, during the Revolution. Okay. You have the British coming. What do you see in these movies? See these guys coming in a straight line, right? Line after line, right? So here we have these guys marching and marching and marching in a straight line, right? Of course, the revolutionaries, they didn't do that. They hid in trees and things like that. So they were a little smarter, I guess. But anyway, so here they come. They're coming in a straight line, and then all of a sudden they hit mud. What happens to the guys that end up in the mud? They slow down. Right, so that's what these light rays are doing. They come along and they slow down. So when you get down to a certain point, as I keep extending this, okay, here come the rays. Some of the rays are starting to come into the medium. But what happens to parts of the rays that are coming in here, they're not coming along at the same speed. They're slowed down. Right? And so what they in effect do is they start to bend. And they slow down a little bit. And in fact, the wavelength changes too. So you can make an argument that spacing between these lines changes. And as they come down, all right, we now have that this is the way the ray is going, perpendicular to these guys. So instead of my ray going straight, once it hits the second medium, it actually ends up bending. So let's see. Here's the original ray, and it's now going in that direction. That's parallel to the bent ray from this wavefront. All right. So when the ray enters, it bends, or what it does is it refracts. We have a refracted ray. And so that's the kind of picture that we get. Okay. Between two media. The light ray comes in and it refracts. And the angle at which it refracts satisfies what's called Snell's law. And actually, if I thought about two points, one in medium one and one in medium two, and ask, what path does light have to travel so that it travels in least time? That's where this comes from. So I can apply some calculus and we can actually derive this law called Snell's law. And that's the basic idea that the early people that studied geometric optics came up with. we're just going to state Snell's law. Snell's law tells me what the relationship is between theta 1 and theta 2 if I know the indices of refraction. So in particular, if I take n1 sine theta 1, that's going to be equal to n2 sine theta 2. And that's the main law governing refraction. See, reflection was a little easier, wasn't it? Right? Angle of incidence is equal to angle of reflection. This one's a little more difficult. It's got sines in it. Okay? But that's the basic forms. You give me the angle of incidence, and you give me the indices of refraction, and I can solve and tell you what the angle of refraction. Alright, so let's see. Let's think about putting some numbers in. Let's say that n1 is 1. In other words, think about that as air. And that this is going to refract from entering water. Okay? So let's take a picture. We have a light going from air in the water. Is going to bend. Right? So it's an easy one to think about. Okay, so let's see. Let's say that the angle of incidence is 10 degrees. So what's the angle of refraction? Well, I could solve for this angle. Sine theta 2 is equal to n1. Over n2 1. n1 is 1, n2 is 1.33 sine of 10 degrees. Of course, now we need to have our calculators in degree mode. Okay, I don't have sine of 10 degrees at the top of my head. So we have to compute this. And what do we get for the sine of theta 2? Okay. Say what?
Oh, sorry.
Well, we don't take, I mean, I just want 1 over 1.33 sine of 10. 0.130. Agree with that?
Check. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so how do I get theta 2? Theta 2, you have to take the inverse sine of the answer and get
7.5.
Say what?
7.5.
7.5. Is that right?
Yeah.
Degrees? So what does that tell me? I come in at 10 degrees, I go, this bends. Closer than 10 degrees, right? 7.5. Okay, let's do another one. Theta 1 is equal to 30 degrees. So what is theta 2 in this case? Now I'm looking for the angle. Part of this is just getting used to computing inverse sines. Say what? 22. So this comes in at roughly 30 degrees, and that should be 22. I wonder how far off I can be. So now we have an idea about what refraction is. Snell's law governs refraction so that we can go ahead and compute a variety of things. this is the case, this picture, where n 2 is bigger than n 1. I have a light ray that's traveling from a low index of refraction to a higher index of refraction. When that happens, it will bend toward the normal. Okay, if I were to instead send light from here up, it's going to bend away. Just imagine going backwards on this light ray. If I sent light this way, it's going to bend away from the normal. Okay, so if the index of refraction for the incident material is bigger, the light ray will go away from the normal. So we can make use of that in doing some things, such as looking at what's called apparent depth. So this is a common type of thing. Okay, you look into a swimming pool, all right, and you see a silver dollar in there, and you want to jump in and get it, right? But what do you find out? You find out that that's not quite in the location where you thought it was, all right, or anything that's down there, right? So the question is, how does that work? And we can think about this in terms of looking at an interface. Again, I'm thinking about air and water to make things interesting. Okay, and I want to locate something or think about how deep something is in the water. So we look for some object in the water, like a fish. Okay, so here we have a fish sitting in the water. Okay, and I'm looking up here, down at the fish. Okay, and so what I'm going to derive here basically is I'm looking straight down at the fish. The picture's a little different if I were standing on a boat over here looking over into the water. So how do I see this fish? I see the fish when the light bounces off the fish, right? And so there's light that's coming off, that's reflected off this fish, and that light is going to come up. Okay. Say the fish is a point fish, that light's going to come up to the surface of the water. Okay. If the water surface weren't there, and right, this were fish in there and I was looking at it. Right? You have all these rays coming off the fish, reflected light. And so I'm going to follow some of these rays. Okay, so let's see. So my fish is about 25. Alright, so let's see. What do we know about this light ray? This light ray is going to hit surface. I look at the normal at that point. And which way is that light beam going to go when it hits the air?
Away from the normal.
It's going to go away from the normal. Alright, so instead of going straight, it's going to bend away from the normal. Okay. I could do the other light rays. I can think of a light ray going off on the other side. Again, it's going to be away from the normal, so I need the normal, roughly. There it's going. That's the straight path without bending, away from the normal, would go. And you can imagine drawing other rays of light, one coming up here, it's going to go away, etc. So I'll draw one other pair. So this is coming there, it goes away from the normal, etc. away. All right, so there we have what the light's doing. What do I see? Do I see a fish? Well, I'm supposed to see a fish, right? What does my eye do? It makes traces all the have these traces all the way back again and form an image. So if I come over here and I trace them back, trace this one back, trace that one back. I think the fish is there. Okay, so this is the effect I was talking about in the pool. And you think that point or whatever it is that you want to dive after, okay, is closer than it is. Then you jump into the pool and you say, wow, I thought it was closer than that. You have to swim a little bit further. Okay, so that's the idea of apparent depth. This is the actual depth. And the book calls D prime. D prime is the apparent depth. It appears to be here when it's really there. Now this is just really a matter of applying Snell's law. Okay, if I apply Snell's law, I can tell which way these are going. I can determine what the angles theta 1 and theta 2 are, and I can see what this depth looks like. Now I've got too many lines drawn here. If I just isolated some of the basic features, here's where my fish is. Okay, here's a ray, it goes up and hits the surface. That's the angle of incidence, which we can call theta 1, because in this picture, the light rays are going from the bottom up. So this is medium 1, and that's medium 2. That's one of the things you have to be careful of. Is which is medium 1 and which is medium 2. Medium 1 is always taken to be the medium with the incident ray. That's where the ray originates, okay, which is upside down compared to what I was doing here. Here the ray originated up in the top part. Okay, so here's that point. That's theta 1. This is distance, this vertical. Here is the distance, and we can say the horizontal is x, so that's x. So if I look at that triangle here, we'll notice that theta 1's related to d and x. So what do I have here? How are d, x, and theta related? What trig function?
Tangent.
All right, opposite over adjacent is tangent. So the tangent of theta 1 is equal to d over x. I could do the same thing for the refracted ray. Refracted ray comes off in that direction, so I could go and extend this back. There's d prime is that distance. The angle is theta 2. And so I could just look at this triangle, which is a version of that one, and we would get tangent theta 2
is equal to d prime over x. Okay, so I have a relationship between the angles and the d's. So if I take this first equation over the second equation, I would get d over x divided by d prime over x equals the tangent of theta 1 over the tangent of theta 2. Of course, the x's are going to cancel, and I'm just going to get the ratio of the d's. So that's going to be d over d prime is equal to. Now this can get ugly, because to get the angles, I have to be able to get a tangent if I know what the sine is. Okay? But that's too hard for us, right? So we're going to assume, okay, that these are small angles. Okay? If those are small angles, then the tangents are approximately equal to the sines. Okay, so if you put in a very small angle and take the sine of it, and you put a small angle and you take the tangent, you get approximately the same thing. Okay, how small the angle has to be, I'm not going to get into that. But it's small enough. All right. So d over d prime is going to be sine theta 1 over sine theta 2. But sine theta 1 over sine theta 2, I can write in terms of the ends. All right, just divide sine theta 2 over here, bring n1 over there, so I get n2 over n1. So this is equal to n2 over n1, and I can now solve for the apparent depth d prime. So bring the d prime over at d. Okay, where's my algebra going? That's for the N2 over N1. So where did I mess up? Alright, so sine theta 1 over sine theta 2 is N2 over N1. Does, but it supposedly took into account that. I don't see any algebraic mistakes. So what did I do wrong? I don't want to stand up here thinking too long. What I'm supposed to get is d prime. Distance, of course, has to be bigger. So for my example for the water, the apparent depth should be equal to 1 over 1.33 times whatever the depth is. And so what do we get for that? If D were equal to 1 meter, then D prime would be equal to 3/4 of a meter, roughly, about 75 centimeters. So this is what we're supposed to get. The question is, where did I make a mistake? Okay, I won't dwell too much on that right now. Talk about that. But there is a mistake there. Gotta be subtle. I don't know. I don't see any errors. I just turned physics upside down, right? Throw the book out. Gotta be wrong. Alright, so, but you get the idea. So, a little bit of trick here. I'm supposed to get, okay, that the actual depth is less than this depth. On the other hand, if there were a bird flying across here and the fish sees the bird, is the fish going to see the bird closer or further away? Is the bird going to think the fish is, is the fish going to think the bird is closer or further?
Further.
Okay, because I can do the same construction. I can take the rays coming off the bird, and when they hit the water, they're going to bend toward the normal. Okay, and we can construct a wave diagram very similar for the fish looking at a bird in the air. Okay. All right, what other kinds of things can we talk about with Snell's law? Well, we could have light ray, as I said in that last example, going the opposite direction. We could have it going instead of coming down from air into water, I could have it coming out of the water. Right? I could have a flashlight here and shine a flashlight toward the surface of the water. Or in some other examples, that could be air and glass. And what we'll find is the following. So what's called internal reflection. So let's play around with Snell's law again. Let's say I have N1 is 1.5 for glass, and N2 is 1.0 for air. Glass, and here's air. And I'm going to send some light. At some angle. Okay, so I've got a little flashlight or something, and I'm shining light. I can't be in there, can I? So it's glass. Yes?
Is it supposed to be x over d? Is the opposite over adjacent?
That's what I said. It's opposite over adjacent. Is that what I did? So opposite of, yeah. Okay, thank you.
told you there was something done that I would go to look at. And that's what I said, Okay, opposite over adjacent. I don't know why I did that, so let's correct this. Opposite is what? Opposite the angle's x, so it's x over d. X over d prime. So what does that do up here? Okay, let me do this in yellow. That's going to give me, so the little yellow marks here are the corrections. Okay? Thanks. Okay, that's what happens when you're up here thinking about what you're doing next. See things straight? All right, so where was I? I was sending some light through glass, and I want to see where it's going to go. Now that we are happy with that, which way is the light going to bend? Should bend away from the normal. Alright, that's the direction it wants to go, but that's the direction it's going to go. Okay. So we could do what I did over there. I could just go through and put in a few angles. So in this case, the incident is below, that's one, and the refracted region is above, is two. And we know that the sine of theta 2 is equal to, and I'm just coming back to this equation here. All right, sine of theta 2 is n1 over n2 sine theta 1 from Snell's law. And then you just take the inverse sine. So we could sit down and start computing, put in a theta 1, get out a theta 2. What is n1 in this case? 1.5. And n2 is 1. So this is 1.5 sine theta 1. So let's put in 10 degrees, and what do you get out for theta 2?
Times one half.
let's see what we get here. If I take sine theta 2 is equal to 1.5 sine of 60, what's the sine of 60 times 1.5?
Just square root 2.
Well, decimal approximation. You get what?
1.3.
So it's about 1.3. What's the inverse sine of 1.3? What do we know about sine functions?
Bounded between negative 1 and 1.
Right. For real numbers, it's bounded between minus 1 and 1. So there's no angle that's going to give me 1.3, right? So that tells you that we have a problem. Now, that makes sense, right? If I start varying this angle, what's this refracted ray doing? As we see, it gets bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger until finally it hits. It's what? What's this angle?
A 90.
90. Right? Not this angle, but something. Right? So when it's horizontal, the angle of refraction is 90 degrees. Beyond that, I can't do anything, right? The light's not going to get out. It stays in the medium. So there is an angle, theta 1, somewhere in here, which is going to give me that 90. For an answer. We're going to call that angle in here theta sub c, or the critical angle. Critical angle is the angle such that if I take and replace theta 1 with theta c, that's going to give me theta 2 is 90 degrees. So if I go to Snell's law, plug in the critical angle, plug in what I expect the refracted angle to be, I can solve for the critical angle. What is the sine of 90?
1.
So I can solve for this. Sine theta c is n2 over n1. And I can get the critical angle. So if I know there's a total internal reflection, I can get this. Do I have to memorize that? I just have to know the idea. Because all I know is it's the ratio of these. If I get the ratio wrong, then I have the sine is equal to a number bigger than 1. Right? So it's either going to be 1.5 over 1 or 1 over 1.5. What do you think it's going to be? 1 over 1.5. So this particular case, the sine of theta c is going to be 1 over 1.5. Take the inverse sine, and we'll should get an angle somewhere between 40 and 60, right? What do we get?
42.
Roughly. So I didn't have to really jump all the way up to 60. I could have gone to 50 and still had some effect. Okay, so that's total internal reflection. Now, total internal reflection is useful in things like optical fibers. Okay, and optical fibers basically a long glass wire in which I can send in some light. This light comes in, and if it comes in just at the right angle, that angle is going to be bigger than, say, 42, and so it's not going to come out in principle. If I make this really thin, I have a better chance of having that angle larger than 42.
And then what's it going to do? It's going to bounce off. Angle of incidence is equal to angle of reflection. And it comes down here. It bounces off again. This angle and that angle should be the same. Okay, and so now the light bounces and it continues. And now what I can do is send this light, encode some information in it, and use it for communication. Okay, and that's precisely what they do with optical fibers, okay, as well as other types of things. So that's the idea of total internal reflection. So this whole part here has to do with refraction. Okay, we have that light not only can reflect from materials, but it can also go in to materials, and when it does so, it encounters regions where the speed of light is different. So it's either going to go and refract towards or away from the normal, depend upon the relationship between the indices of refraction. Snell's law is the key to refraction.